But it worked this time for it.
Yeah,
that's great.
Good. Let's go to page 17.
We found out what our problem is in the doctor's opinion. We were able to see and identify with another alcoholic who had that problem in Bill's story. And now then, we're going to look at the second goal of what is the solution to that problem. The problem is we're powerless over alcohol. Our lives have become unmanageable. On page 17, chapter 2, there is a solution. We're going to see two powers. We're going to see the power of the fellowship that supports us, and we're going to see the power of the vital spiritual experience which will change us. And those two powers added together in our lives should be enough to overcome our powerlessness over alcohol. So let's start looking at those two powers. Page 17, first thing we'll look at is the fellowship.
You see, there is a solution, and I got a friend back home who used to say that there's as many different types of solutions as there are people in AA. And I said, no. If you look at the chapter heading on page 17, it'll tell you how many solutions there are. There is a solution, one. Two powers, but one solution. He said, we of Alcoholics Anonymous know a thousand men and women who were just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They've solved the drink problem. He said, we're average Americans. Today we can say we're average citizens of the world. Because my last understanding, we had 154 countries around the world. So we're average citizens of the world today. All sections of this country and men's occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and understanding which is indescribably wonderful. And that's what we have during the break, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all talking at each other. Nobody's listening, but we're talking at each other. We're greeting each other. That's the fellowship. And you can stay sober on the fellowship a long, long time. He said we're people who normally would not mix. As I look around the room here this morning, I can say that we're probably the most mixed up group of people in California here this morning. We're people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and understanding which is indescribably wonderful. The fellowship is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And you can stay sober on a fellowship for a long, long time.
Now, all good writers use examples of what you already know to be able to make their points and to teach you something new. His next statement says, we are like the passengers of a great liner. The moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from the steerage to the captain's table. Back in 1939, the way that people traveled primarily in those days from one continent to another was on the great ocean liners. And Bill knew he could use that as an example, and he knew people would understand what he's talking about. And I always think back to the Titanic. You know, known as the great ocean liners that they had, the Titanic was one of the greatest examples. They had a distinct class system on them. If you were the poorest people, and usually those were the immigrants coming from Europe to the United States, you usually booked passage in what they called the steerage section. The steerage section was way down in the bowels of the ship. Very little fresh air, dormitory-style living. I call it the cheese sandwich section. Accommodations were not very good. But if you didn't have much money, that's the way you traveled. Now, if you wanted to travel a little better than that, you could go into third class, come up a deck or two. So your staterooms were a little better than a dormitory-style living. Food was a little better. If you wanted to travel better, you could go into second class. Then you could go into first class. And first class is where the people that had lots of money would ride, the best staterooms, the best food, and the best everything. But that still wasn't considered to be the real elite section of the ship. If you had the right kind of money.
Old money.
If you had the right religious background, if you had the right everything, you might be asked to dine at the captain's table. And at the captain's table, they had the best service, the best food, the best everything. And it was a long, long ways from the steerage section to the captain's table. Normally, in the voyage across the ocean, those people would never have met. The one from the steerage section would never have met the one from the captain's table. In fact, they even had separate stairwells where they wouldn't even accidentally meet. And normally, they would never have met each other, period, in the voyage across the ocean. But the Titanic, the night it hit the iceberg, and the ship began to sink. And here's two guys standing at the rail of the ship. Now, one of them just came from the captain's table. He's got on his tuxedo, his tie, all of his finery and everything else. Standing next to him is a guy from the steerage section. He's got on his old work blue jeans, his old brogan shoes, and these guys had nothing in common with each other, period, until they jumped overboard. And when their butts hit that cold water, they had something in common. How in the hell do you save yourself? And they grabbed onto each other and held onto each other, and I doubt very seriously if the man from the captain's table requested a financial statement from the man from the steerage section. When they were saved, got out of the water, back on another ship or on land, there was a feeling amongst them which was an indescribably wonderful feeling. It's always true with human beings. When we escape from a common peril, there is a feeling amongst us which is absolutely indescribably wonderful. But as soon as they got back on land and everything was safe, the common peril was over, they went their individual ways, probably never to see each other again. But our common peril, alcoholism, is always standing right outside the door waiting on us. And the feeling that you and I have for each other is one of those indescribably wonderful feelings that people get who escape from the common peril, but ours does not subside because it's always there. And there is a great feeling in this room amongst the people in the room, one of the greatest feelings you can have. He said, unlike the feeling of the ship's passenger, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. Here's the first great warning in the book. These feelings you and I have for other, these things that bring us together and form the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, even though they are great, great things, are only one element in the powerful cement which binds us. There's been tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have the way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. So we have the power of the fellowship that supports us as we gather together in our home groups and in meetings like this and etc. But the book warns us that that power is not sufficient. It says the tremendous fact is that we have discovered a common solution. A little later on we're going to see that the common solution is the vital spiritual experience brought about through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's two powers. The power of the fellowship that supports us, the power of the common solution, a spiritual experience which changes us. And those two powers added together will be enough to overcome our powerlessness over alcohol. Now, I think one of the greatest tragedies in the world today, and we see lots of tragedies in the world today, but one of the greatest is that we people who are members of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're spending literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds and hundreds of men and women work hours, trying to attract other alcoholics to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we've got thousands upon thousands upon thousands of alcoholics who are members of AA who are running around with untreated alcoholism. They are members of the Fellowship, but they're doing nothing about the common solution. They're doing nothing about the program of recovery. Now, why aren't they? Again, I think it's simply because nobody's telling them they need to. You know, every new alcoholic we work with, we take them to this page. We make sure they understand this. You betcha, we've got to have the fellowship. But the fellowship alone is not sufficient. If we're going to recover from alcoholism, we're going to have to change. And the changes are brought about through the 12-step program, which leads to the spiritual experience, or what Dr. Silkworth called the psychic change.